Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 16th, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, it's time to spend another hour together talking about our nation's space program. And oh my, do we have a lot to talk about today. The sky seems to be falling in on us all over the world this week. And the big question on my mind, at least, is will this mean anything of substance to our space program? My two guests in the studio today will offer up their expert opinions on the matter of asteroids and a host of other space-related topics, especially as they apply to the space program here in Florida. Laura Seward and Eddie Ellegood from the Florida Space Development Council will join us in just a minute or so. Later on, we'll update you on the launch schedule here at the Cape, and Laura and Eddie will participate in the terminal count portion at the end of the program, as usual. And as always, we welcome and appreciate any thoughts, questions, or comments you might have about what we're discussing or anything having to do with our space program. Give us a call by dialing 321-768-1240. Or if you'd prefer to send us an email, the address is spacetalking@AOL.com. Okay, well, there is a lot to talk about on a variety of space-related topics, so I do want to get right to my guests today. With me in the studio is Laura Seward, a graduate student at the University of Central Florida, Go Knights, who is the president of the newly renamed Florida Space Research Council, which is our local chapter of the National Space Society. Her able vice president of the group is Edward Ellegood, longtime colleague of mine who is now director of aerospace development at my alma mater of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. Welcome, Laura and Eddie. Laura, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for having good. Us on Eddie. The show.
Thanks.
There's Eddie's voice. All right. Very good. Well, Laura, let's start with you. I always like to get to know people and where you came from and how did you get to where you are today?
I am from the suburbs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Happily came down to sunny Florida for my undergraduate at FIT.
Yeah.
Moved up to Huntsville, got my master's, and then loved it so much down here that I had to come back. So I am a Knight. I go to UCF. I'm wrapping up my doctorate in planetary science, and I'm happy to be president of the Florida Space Development Council.
That's great. Now, so growing up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, besides being an Eagles fan?
I prefer not to say.
Okay, very good. That's very smart of you. Why space?
I have loved space ever since I can remember. I remember writing a story in first grade about how I was going to be an astronaut going to the moon. So this has been something that's been with me for a long time. My parents were supportive. They sent me to space camp. I've been to space camp 6 times.
Oh, really?
In Alabama, yeah.
Wow.
So my parents really encouraged that love of space, and I knew I had to pursue it for college.
But why space? Was it watching astronauts on TV? Was it Star Trek? I mean,
I think it probably was a combination of watching Star Trek with my parents.
Really?
And just reading lots of books about it as a kid and just looking at the stars. I had a telescope. And who doesn't fall in love with the night sky?
That is so cool. That is so cool. Eddie, talk about your background. Where do you hail from and how did you get to where you're at today?
Well, I grew up in the Panhandle, Fort Walton Beach. Went to college at Florida State University.
Right.
And began working there for the Florida Department of Commerce, where I was involved in setting up the Spaceport Florida Authority.
The original.
And moved down here with that organization in 1990. I wasn't a childhood space geek or fanatic in any way. I just came into it through becoming an economist in Tallahassee.
More of a, you've always had more of the space policy, more of the you know, how does it work behind the scenes as opposed to the engineering and the science aspect of it all?
True.
So why space for you? I mean, was it just a good job at the right place at the right time, or was there something that struck you about the space program that was particularly inspirational or something?
Well, at the beginning, it was just a job. But as anyone who's come into contact with the space program knows, it grows on you. And it's never boring. So I stuck with it through the past 20 years.
Yeah, and the early days of the Spaceport Authority, I'm hopefully we'll have time to get back to that and how things have evolved through the years and why that's still important now with Space Florida and some of the work your chapter is doing too to help advocate that. So Laura, let's go to you and let's start spending a few moments now talking about the Florida Space Development Council. Give us sort of the elevator speech. What is it? Who makes it up? You know, what's it all about?
Our chapter was founded as the National Space Society chapter in 2006, and it's slowly grown since then. We hosted an International Space Development Council conference, International Space Development Conference,
right,
in Orlando in 2009, and after that, the chapter kind of became inactive. I joined in 2010 and took over the presidency 2 years ago when I was elected, and this year we've really been focusing on rebranding our chapter. We've renamed it. We have a new website. We're developing a new logo. We've got a new purpose, new goals, and we're really excited to be moving forward.
Well, we'll get into all of that in just a minute. And I want to understand, we had Paul Damphouse, the executive director, well, I guess the former executive director as of, what, this past Friday or coming up this Friday, of the National Space Society at the national level. We've talked about the different student groups. When I was at Embry-Riddle back in the 80s, you know, we had the L5 Society. And the National Space Institute, of course, they merged together, became the National Space Society. Chapter-based organization. So you've got a national organization at headquarters in Washington, and you've got these individual chapters that all kind of have their own take on what they do and how they do it with the different cultures and leadership. Here in Central Florida, as I recall, and Eddie, and you know, you've been around for a while too, you can correct me, but there's not been a real strong National Space Society chapter presence here. There have been different tries at it through the years, different names. Now, Laura, with you guys coming along with this particular group, it seems like something's finally taking hold and looks promising in terms of how stable this chapter will be and where it's going to go in the future. Would you think that's true?
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. As Eddie will describe, we are filling a niche that needs to be filled. There's a lot of groups that have come and gone, and we see where there's a vacuum and we need to fill it.
So Eddie, talk about that. What is the purpose of this particular group, and how is it different from joining, say, the National Space Club Florida Committee or the Planetary Society or name any other organization that seems to be out there?
Right. Well, like you, I've been involved in several space committees, panels, organizations. And like you know, groups like the National Space Club don't really get into the policy side. It's more of a networking and
kind of high-level advocacy.
Right. There were other groups that have come and gone, the Florida Space Business Roundtable.
Sure.
The Florida Aviation Aerospace Alliance, the Aerospace Career and Development Council. They have a 2 or 3 year lifespan, and then typically they fade away. And we're filling a niche here, focusing on policy issues, whereas some of the other continuing space organizations, like the National Space Club, don't want to tread in that way.
Well, and it's more of a, it seems like it's, like you said, networking, more of a corporate kind of thing, too. The National Space Society has always been chapter and individual based, and the idea that, like, as when I was a kid and was invited to join National Space Institute, you know, you send in your $10 and now you get some cool stuff in the mail, and you can. It was more of a cheerleader kind of thing. Rah rah, support your local space club, you know, and get kids excited and do all those kind of things. The direction that this chapter is taking is very different in terms of filling that niche than just simply getting people excited about space and basic informative kind of stuff, educational kind of campaigns. And hearing the music, we'll get into that after we take this first break. We'll talk more about how the Florida Space Development Council does fill this niche. We'll be right back in a moment. I'm Jim Banky. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Welcome back, everybody, to Space Talk. 321-768-1240 is the number to participate in the program today. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. In the studio with us today is Laura Seward and Eddie Ellegood. They're of the, although they have regular day jobs, their hobbies, if you will, the Florida Space Development Council, a chapter of the National Space Society. And we're talking about how this group kind of fills in the niche of what's going on compared to some of the other groups that are out there. And again, the National Space Society has generally been seen as sort of this broad space advocacy group. They would, you know, you might think they'd sponsor a telescope viewing, or they'd, you know, you bring in an astronaut to talk, or there'd be some kind of special space day at the ballpark, and you'd hand out stuff to everybody. And this group, with the rebranding, Laura, to the Florida Space Development Council, gives this local chapter a very different feel to it. Talk about this rebranding effort, and talk about the niche that you're trying to fill in doing by calling yourself a council.
Yeah, that's correct. We are still very inclusive. We are still a grassroots organization, nonprofit, there for the advocacy and promotion of space. And taking that into account, we want to promote discussion. We want to promote, just like we said, advocacy. The residents of Florida, the citizens of our country, they deserve a voice, and they deserve to say what direction we should go in our space program, or space programs, as some people like to call it.
Right.
So that's what we are here for. We're here to take those voices into account and to speak with one voice and to let our local politicians know, and also our national politicians know, what direction we want to go in.
Talk about some of the activities that you have done and certainly plan to do in the future.
Sure. Well, we have our bi-monthly space locals at our bi-monthly meetings. We have a local person who is involved in the space industry or space research in one way or another come and speak, a local expert. Come and speak to the group, and it's not a traditional lecture series. They do start out with a background information, good talk, and then we open it up to a question and answer roundtable discussion. So we really promote anybody and everybody who's interested in the topic to come. You don't need to be an expert. You don't need to have credentials. You just come and speak, ask questions, learn. That's what we're there for, is to bring people of all sorts together to learn about a specific topic.
You've had a couple of those activities in the recent past. By the way, one of them I noticed was at 2 o'clock on Saturday, right when this program airs. So we really need to work out on the timing of that, because, you know, you should all be at home listening to the program. But you had a variety of different topics. It's not just human spaceflight. It's not just, you know, one particular area of the program. Talk about some of the different topics you've covered.
Sure. Our most recent topic had to do with economic development in this area. Future topics include space weather involved in space launches, the Shiloh Launch Pad Initiative. We're wanting to build a launch pad outside of military and government control. Previous topics have included colonization of the solar system. It's whatever topic, asteroid mining, whatever topic it is that people want to hear about, that we have a local representative who can speak about. And it's anything having to do with space.
Eddie, talk some more about the space policy part of this. What can a group do like this, like the Florida Space Development Council? What can it do? What kind of impact can it make here locally and in Tallahassee, and especially during the next legislative session?
Well, you're familiar with Space Day, March 6th in Tallahassee. A group of industry leaders has been putting this together for the past, 10 years.
Yeah, at least.
And we intend to be a voice during that event, and we're looking at our own list of space policy priorities that we will advocate to elected officials in Tallahassee, both at Space Day and after Space Day. There are about a dozen space-related policy and funding issues before the legislature this year, and we're looking to our membership to give us their druthers on which ones they'd like us to stand behind and what they'd like to see changed.
Do you see the chapter aligned with sort of the industry goals, the Space Day group's goals? I mean, we're all trying to say the same thing to these legislators.
So far, yeah. The issues that the folks at Space Day will advocate seem to have been accepted in general by our membership. And our membership, by the way, has grown to about 50.
Yeah, I heard you hit the milestone, yeah.
Corporate and individual. And we try to keep our membership affordable, $5
per individual. That's not bad. That was easy to pay.
Yeah, that way we really get a grassroots membership behind us, and we can speak for a much broader group of individuals.
Without getting too deep into the tech, well, I shouldn't say technical, but certainly the shop talk, you know, what are some of the things that are on the list for legislative session this year? What are some of the areas of concern?
Well, every year, funding for the state's space development activities is in question, and Space Florida typically gets a budget $10 million or more. This year, they're seeking, again, $20 million for their own operations and development efforts. And then on top of that, the Florida Department of Transportation, which has formally recognized space transportation as one of their modes, is seeking $20 million in recurring annual funding for investment in spaceport infrastructure around the state, not just here at the Cape, but also in Jacksonville at the Cecil Spaceport. And there's another bill locally sponsored in Tallahassee that would establish the Space Coast Regional Airport as a spaceport.
Right.
And give them access to those transportation dollars.
Eddie, I want to ask you this more as just taking advantage of your general background. You know, one of my, I don't know if I want to say one of my fights through the years, but one of the arguments I've made whenever I've had a chance, certainly as we talked about developing Space Florida back in 2006, was this notion that, you know, naturally here on the Space Coast, you know, we're concerned, first of all, that it's in our backyard. So it's a very parochial, local issue. But we're also focused on launch. Now when you talk to the rest of the state seems to see the space program as just launch and just a Brevard County issue. With something like the Florida Space Development Council, which has representatives and members, I would assume, throughout Central Florida, if not statewide, you know, I got to assume that's still an ongoing battle for all of us to convince the folks in Tallahassee that this is not just a Brevard issue and that we have to focus on developing things that are more than just supporting launch operations.
Yeah, the statewide nature of the industry has been hammered in Tallahassee every year. Legislators generally acknowledge that now, that it's just about in every county in the state there's some space industry presence. And they know that while Brevard is the center for the state's presence in the industry, that there are other factors, other companies, other university programs around the state. Mm-hmm. But of course, elected officials are replaced every other year, and it's a continuing process.
Constant re-education, isn't it?
Space Day in Tallahassee is a big step toward doing that.
Do you guys know how many folks from your group are going to support Space Day at this point, or is it still too early to give the final count?
All of the membership have a voice in it, but just Eddie and I will be traveling as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Will you be joining other Space Day folks to when you start doing the individual visits to the offices, or that's going to work out?
We're formally built into the schedule of visits with legislators. There will be probably a dozen teams going around the Capitol meeting with different elected officials.
Crazy busy day. I used to thought the Minnesota State Fair was wild until I was up at a session and you start seeing everyone running around from office to office. And Laura, have you ever had a chance to do that or see that?
Last year, I organized some visits by myself to some representatives in D.C., and that was a lot of fun.
So it is crazy, isn't it? I mean, everyone in their different color T-shirts and funny hats and things to hand out, and, you know, it's literally a circus up there. It's really crazy. I wanted to make sure I asked you, Laura, talk about the membership. You know, obviously anybody can join. You don't have to work in the space program to join. I mean, my kids could join if they wanted to, if I could convince them to. Getting them $5 out of them is pretty tough. But do you have the wide-ranging membership, and do you see yourself as a Central Florida chapter, which previous chapters have even named themselves that, or is this truly now you're really going for the statewide?
We are truly a Florida chapter. We say that we reach the Space Coast and Orlando metro area, but in all honesty, we reach farther than that. We've got membership up in Jacksonville and St. Augustine and down to, I think, Miami and all over. We even have members at large in Huntsville, Alabama, and Ohio.
Oh, really?
We do. So we're up to 52 members as of a couple days ago, and that includes 3 corporate members. We're currently building our corporate membership package as we speak to bring in corporate members. So we are quickly growing our membership, and we invite anybody who wants to join. Anybody can join. Your kids can join. Anybody can join. It's $5. You pay online, or you can bring your $5 to a meeting if you want.
Sure.
We got a simple membership form open to anybody right there on our website.
The website now is up and running. At least you have something up and running.
It is up and running. You should be able to get to it through nssflorida.org.
NSSFlorida.org. NSSFlorida.org. So NSS and then Florida spelled out .org. NSSFlorida.org. Okay. That works for me. Look, Eddie and Laura, stand by. We're going to pause now, take our 5-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get you all caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. Although, once again, there's no football going, so, you know, who cares? And then we'll continue talking about space with our guest Laura Seward and Ellie Good of the Florida Space Development Council. I'm Jim Benke. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Benke.
And welcome back, everybody, to our second half of Space Talk right here on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions or comments. The phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@aol.com. Hey, before we continue our discussions with Laura Seward and Eddie Ellegood from the Florida Space Development Council, I want to take a moment and tell you about and talk about the passing this week of a legend in the space reporting business. Reginald Turnell was the BBC's aviation and space correspondent since the space age began when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik in 1957. During those early days, he raced between Moscow and the Cape, covering the launches of Yuri Gagarin, German Titov, Alan Shepard, and John Glenn. The pace never seemed to let up as the space race heated up. Reg and his wife, Margaret, made many trips here to the Cape to cover everything from Mercury through Apollo and on to the space shuttle. In 1970, Reg was famously and practically the only journalist on hand late at night in Mission Control Houston, the night that Apollo 13 reported having a problem, and many credit him with having that scoop as being the first. Of course, he was quickly joined by many others as the story unfolded. Now, much later, I was fortunate to have spent many, many hours at the Kennedy Space Center press site hanging out with Reg and Margaret as we waited for a space shuttle launch or a spacewalk or some such event. They were certainly one of the most interesting and charming couples I've ever known and worked with. They were so willing to share stories. They were never afraid to ask questions about something they didn't know about. And they were always interested in hearing how my young children were doing and about their new adventures as the kids grew up. Now, my fondest and most striking memory about Reg is of his red typewriter. At a time when all of us younger space reporters were using the first laptop computers from Radio Shack and filing our stories using modems that you had to directly connect to your phone, Reg was banging out his stories on his typewriter, his trusty typewriter, and dictating his words to his editors back in London. Reg remained a space reporter to the very end, writing a remembrance just last August of Neil Armstrong for our friend Stephen Young's Astronomy Now magazine. Reg is survived by his wife Margaret and their 2 sons, and he would have been 98 in May. We will miss Reg Turnhill, no doubt about it. In the studio with us today, Laura Seward, Eddie Ellegood, Florida Space Development Council, a chapter of the National Space Society. And I don't know how we want to get into this, because I want to ask you about it, but I know you don't know a lot about it. This past week, Paul Damphouse, who was the executive director of the National Space Society and a guest on this program just a few weeks ago, suddenly turned in his resignation. Laura, Eddie, I don't know, do you guys know anything more about it than just that they turned it in and cited some difficulties or some different directions that people wanted to go? Well, how would you characterize it, Eddie?
Well, the National Space Society was born of two different groups that merged together. I don't know how many years ago, but
a long time, 20.
Yeah, they brought together a construct for this new organization that seemed convoluted, maybe overly complicated for an executive director to wield any power over. So I think Paul alluded to that difficulty in his resignation letter. We don't know much more than that, but the Florida Space Development Council and all the other National Space Society chapters are pretty autonomous from the leadership group in Washington. And the strength that we and the other chapters have are in their own organization, and often they work together to do things with the national headquarters level support. But it's really the chapters that get the work done.
Hey, Laura, have you been surprised? You know, Eddie and I have been around the block here on this kind of stuff for a while. You know, the space community as a whole seems to have a lot of difficulty trying to get on the same page about things. You know, we're given an opportunity and then we argue over how to do stuff. And the splintering takes place and we can't get our act together. You know, you're a graduate student, planetary science. You know, one would immediately assume you're the, you know, robots only and never human spaceflight, and we want to just pigeonhole you and label you and put you in your place right then and there. What are your reactions to all this kind of stuff? Do you find it surprising? Do you find it frustrating? Is it no big deal? I mean, how do you feel about the state of our affair in the space program and you coming into it now as a graduate?
I don't find it surprising at all. This is America. We are a country with individual ideas that we promote very strongly, and it's all about putting those ideas out there and letting the stronger ones come to a consensus and then moving forward. So this doesn't surprise me whatsoever. Each person will have their own background, their own expertise, their own opinions on things, and they will speak their mind. And whichever ideas come to the forefront, those are the ones that we need to then decide on, come to an agreement, decide which path we want to pursue, and move forward as a unified group.
But isn't that the problem? We can't seem to agree on that path after we've all expressed our opinions?
Yes, that is a problem. It's a big problem.
So what do we do about it?
I don't have the answer to that.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
If I knew that, maybe we could move forward a little bit better. But I think that it's not surprising at all. And I do think that it's part of our democratic process to listen to all these voices. We just need to come to a place where we can all move forward. And we won't ever agree. This isn't a topic that is going to be black and white. This is a topic with lots of shades of gray. And things change all the time. And it's not something that we're ever going to come to a full agreement on. And that's okay, as long as we keep moving forward.
Yeah, and that is the challenge, to keep moving forward and finding that common ground. Well, let's talk about some of the topics of the day. Asteroids. Who would have thunk? You know, I've said for a long time the greatest thing the space program needed was an asteroid aimed at downtown Manhattan, you know, in about a five-year warning. And we would have a space program put together so fast and infrastructure built and put in place so fast to make your head spin. And we joke about it. And Representative Hall, I think it was, in Congress, were quoted as saying recently that if you talk about planetary defense and asteroids and whatnot, you're the chicken, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, Congressman, and no one takes you seriously. And yet, as we saw over Russia, this giant, relatively speaking, giant asteroid comes whipping through our atmosphere, sets off an explosion, 20 times the force of the bomb in Hiroshima, something like that is what NASA was saying. You know, if this isn't an opportunity to do something with our space advocacy, with our pro-space groups, I don't know what is. How do you guys react to that? Eddie, how do you react to that news when you see it? And how do you react to it from the standpoint of, okay, what can we do? What's the message in Tallahassee? What's the message in Washington right now?
I think this will wake some people up in Washington. I've already seen signs that, actually a hearing is planned. One was called by Lamar Alexander,
yeah.
I think, to address the issue of asteroid threats. And NASA is spending some minuscule amount of its annual budget on this issue.
Yeah, what Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think he tweeted something, was like 1/20 of 1% of NASA's budget is based on asteroids.
Yeah, there might be one or two programs at the agency that focus on this, and I think we'll see, despite the sequestration threat and the budget impacts of that, we'll see some money shifted over to this kind of activity.
You know, sometimes I wonder which political party is the right way to go on this in terms of space. It just seems like there should, you know, it's generally been a bipartisan thing. But what I'm getting at, and maybe I'll get your comments from, you know, for all the money we spend on the military, and it's important to do that, it's important to stay strong, I believe in that. But the military is there to defend us against something that's going to take away our way of living. And nothing would take away our way of living in this country faster than a 200-foot asteroid hitting, you know, the middle of Chicago and taking out half the country or who knows what. We should be spending, you know, you look at the billions spent on the military, and why isn't there some budget for this, and why is it just a laughingstock? Eddie, you talked about that maybe some people are taking more seriously. Is it time, Laura? I don't know. I want to get your opinion because you sound like you pretty much know what you want to talk about. What do you think? Take some money away from the military, give it to NASA? Is the answer just doubling NASA's budget? Is the answer just throwing money at this? I mean, you see this asteroid blow up over Russia. What do you think?
I take a little more skeptical view of things. I think that if it's actually a small meteor that exploded over Russia. It wasn't that big.
30 feet or something like that.
In the grand scheme of things, Earth has seen a lot bigger destruction than what hit over Russia's skies.
Right.
So that kind of thing, if it had happened here, I think it would have gotten a lot more attention. But I think it's easy to overlook it when we're not the ones fixing broken glass and patching up injuries. I think that it'll take something here in the States for the politicians here to take a closer look at it more seriously. You know, people can give it talk now because it's in the news, but a week from now, a month from now, will any of action be taken at all? I actually doubt it.
Well, meanwhile, following other trends, there are at least two commercial asteroid ventures that could lend a hand to, at least they're planning to identify near-Earth asteroids, and they could be part of a protection program as well.
Eddie, what do you think about commercial space in general and wearing your hat with Embry-Riddle? You know, you guys have just announced an undergraduate degree program for Bachelor in Commercial Space. Give me the 30-second summary of what you're up to up there.
Well, the first of its kind is what we're trying to do. It's a commercial space operations bachelor's degree program at our Daytona Beach campus. And there's a lot of interest in students there. As you well know, it's an aviation-focused university. And we're more and more trying to turn our attention to space-related opportunities, and our student body really wants to see that.
Well, that's great. I'm going to ask you one more question about Riddle when we come back. It is time for our final break of the day. When we come back, we'll check in with our weekly local launch forecast. We'll wrap up our conversations of the day, and we'll pose our 5 terminal count questions to our guests. I know you can't wait. I'm Jim Baker. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back, everyone, as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. With your reminder, you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop, of course, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk. You can find links to an archive of past Space Talk shows, text versions of our more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. You can also follow us online with Twitter at Space Talking, and there's a Space Talk page to like on Facebook as well. All right, let's take a look now at the local launch forecast. NASA this week confirmed that March 1st remains the official, unofficial target launch date for a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket to lift off with a Dragon spacecraft bound for the International Space Station. The launch time remains aimed at 10:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. This will be an instantaneous launch window, so the Falcon 9 countdown and the weather must cooperate, or we'll see a delay of at least 24 hours. The absolutely official launch date will be confirmed in the next week or so and set following the final flight readiness reviews and a successful hot fire test of the 9 Falcon 9 Merlin main engines out at the launch pad. Now, there's no official word yet, by the way, on the exact cause and solution of the problem that SpaceX experienced during the last Falcon 9 launch when one of the first stage engines shut down. But it seems anyway that both NASA and SpaceX are comfortable with proceeding with this shot. So once again, our next launch from the Cape Friday, March 1st at 10:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, for more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. All right, in the studio today, Laura Seward and Eddie Ellegood, Florida Space Development Council, a chapter of the National Space Society. Laura, a UCF graduate student working planetary sciences, and Eddie Ellegood, Director of Aerospace Development for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. And Eddie, I wanted to just ask you one more quick question about Embry-Riddle and talk about it. When I went to school there way back when, you know, space was something we wrote about in the Avion newspaper, but we didn't have any space programs since I graduated. In fact, I graduated. Did you notice I graduated the same day with Nicole Stott?
Oh, really?
Who, yeah, we were in the same. In fact, I probably did an L5 space event at Embry-Riddle that she probably attended, and we never knew each other, never met each other. But in any case, talk real quickly before we get to terminal count about some of the space-related things that Embry-Riddle has gotten itself into.
Well, Nicole is now on our board of trustees, and she, along with other faculty and management at the university, are trying to turn more attention to space opportunities. Some of my favorites are some CubeSat projects we're working on, and we're trying to leverage some of the aviation expertise we have, especially with the FAA's Next Gen program, to
air traffic control. Yeah.
Right. To put together some capabilities for space traffic management sometime in the future.
Is that space traffic in orbit or space traffic as in getting in and out of the national airspace system as you come and go?
Yes.
Okay. That sounds like a good answer. More astronauts hopefully coming from Embry-Riddle. Did I read something where you guys, CubeSats is the satellites you're building or working on or?
Well, there's one in particular that takes the this next-gen technology called ADS-B, which is our whole fleet of aircraft are equipped with this GPS-based tracking surveillance technology.
Right.
And we're putting those on rockets as well and ultimately on a CubeSat that we hope to fly and launch from the International Space Station.
So now my work with NASA Aeronautics, I know all about ADS-B and what NASA's working on that. The idea of putting one of those on a rocket is a very intriguing idea, intriguing.
The FAA sees that as a potential solution to some of the challenges for space traffic management, both traffic within space and traversing through the National Airspace System.
Range safety issues, too?
Maybe it's a alternative to some of our existing range safety technologies.
We could spend another hour talking about Shiloh at this point, too. We're just running out of time. We do have, however, enough time to play Terminal Count, our new feature at the end of Space Talking, which we will ask you five simple questions to get to know you a little bit better. Lauren, Eddie, this is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. This is not a contest, of course, so at home, please, no wagering. All right, Laura, here you go. Here's the big question. Coolest rocket?
Taking the broad definition of a rocket, I would say Serenity from Firefly.
Well, you can do that. Yeah, Serenity. Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, what a great show. Eddie, what about you? Coolest rocket?
Well, I actually launched a Super Loki rocket, so I'll claim that one.
Super Loki. Blink and you miss it.
It just
flies right out of here. Yeah, weather rockets and all that stuff. You push the button a few times, I would imagine.
Yes.
That's great. Okay, Laura, first launch that you saw or remember?
First launch I saw was when I moved down to Florida in 2006.
Wow.
Is that right? No, 2002. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I remember distinctly watching Columbia, actually, that launch. That wasn't my first, but that was the one
one you remember.
Clearly remember because of the incident.
Okay. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. So you were here for Columbia's last launch,
is what
you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, in 2003. Wow. Oh, wow. Okay, Eddie, first launch you saw, remember?
I don't know which one was the first I remember seeing, but ones that stick out were the explosions of Atlas and I'm sorry, not Atlas, but Delta and Titan rockets that I viewed from the Cape.
Okay. Those were the ones in the 1990s.
Yeah, very, very striking images.
Yeah, Delta II. Boy, I'll never forget.
Very, very striking images.
Yeah, Delta II. Boy, I'll never forget.